All persons having business to draw near and give their attention, and having peace and go six across the street from before they shall be heard, God save the Commonwealth and the Honorable Court.
Be seated. Call the case, please.
For the appellant, Loren Mason, and I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of my time.
You have it, and you know the lights. It's green as you start. When it gets to yellow, you're at the 5 minute point. We won't stop you. But the red means you're finished.
Thank you. If it pleases the court, this case deals with a number of significant legal issues, but it really started out as a very simple matter. Defendant in this case, Loren Mason, was a passenger in a vehicle. His vehicle was stopped by an officer of the law based on what the officer described as seeing as a dangling
object.
Counsel, may I
interrupt you for a second? You say it's a simple case, and this is the exhibit that the trial court was using, right? Why is it no more simple than this? I can't see those two officers by holding this up.
Well, Your Honor,
hold up. I can't see you. I can't see that, counsel. Now, if the standard is the lowest possible standard under criminal law, which is suspicion, reasonable suspicion, how is this not incredibly simple?
Your Honor, if I have a minute to respond. First, we start with the testimony of the trial court and the findings of fact of the trial judge. In the trial court,
the findings of fact that you refer to were comments made from the bench at a suppression hearing, the end of which the trial judge said, I need more time to think about this. And then when he went back to the bench at the beginning of trial, reversed his position and flat out held there was reasonable suspicion.
No, Your Honor, with all due respect, he made several significant findings of fact that were not mere comments. They were findings of fact. He looked it up. He went out to the parking lot and did what he described as a viewing, after which he came back and still concluded that it would not obstruct anyone's view.
Well, what he said at the trial was that he was using the wrong standard. That's his words, not
yes,
mine. He used the wrong standard in making those remarks, and the test was not substantially obstruct. The test was reasonable suspicion that it might obstruct.
And, Your Honor, before you get to reasonable suspicion that it might obstruct, you have to start with what did the officer observe at the time?
Well, he observed this. We don't need testimony to know what this is, because this is not a demonstrative exhibit. It's the very sticker.
Now, Your Honor, with all due respect, there's no evidence that at the time he made the stop, he observed that. What he observed in his testimony was a dangling object. We don't know how far away he was standing.
Let me interrupt you. You're saying that the testimony doesn't establish that the officer said he observed, clearly observed, as he went by the vehicle, this parking pass hanging from...
No, what the testimony establishes is when the vehicle went by him, and then he caught up to it later, but when it went by him and he initiated the stop...
Well, how did we get this if the officer didn't take it off of the vehicle?
Your Honor, it was introduced in testimony, but we don't get to that point until we determine what did he actually observe and did he have reasonable suspicion at the time he observed it. Now, what he actually observed was a dangling object. He repeated that over and over again. We don't know how far he where he was, how close he was.
Is your argument that the dangling object is not this?
No, Your Honor, that's not the argument. The argument is this. If you're holding it and I'm standing here, I may have one view of it. If I'm standing at the back of that courtroom and you're seeing something moving, that's another view. We don't know. He gave no description of what the dangling object was from his own testimony. We have no knowledge of how close he was. The court even found that he had no suspicion that it even needed to obstruct a view. So if he has no suspicion that it even needs to obstruct a view, We don't know what's going through his mind.
Why do we care what's going through his mind?
Well, but what's going through his mind is important in this sense. When you're looking for something specific, okay, let me give you an example. If I was under the belief that I could stop somebody every time I saw a bulge in their pocket, let's say, versus I could stop somebody when I saw the outline of the knife in their pocket, intuitively I'd be looking for two different things. And if you asked me 4 months later to reconstruct what it is that I saw, I might come up with two very different results. Now,
counsel, let me ask a different question. Prior to the stopping of the automobile, was the officer familiar with that particular car? Had he seen that particular car before? Had car been involved in any other matters?
He seemed to recognize the owner of the vehicle, but I'm not.
Okay, that's
okay.
You've answered my question.
Okay, but I think getting back to the issue at hand. So the first issue is: was there reasonable suspicion in his mind at the time of the stop, based on facts that he then articulated to the court?
Why do you keep saying in his mind? Because I understand the law to be that it doesn't matter what's in his mind. What matters are the facts that were physically observed.
Well,
and if this is the fact that was visibly observed, it doesn't matter what was going through his mind.
But we don't know where it was observed from, and we don't know how much attention he paid to it. Obviously, if an officer says, I stopped something because when I saw it, based on my training and experience, I saw it clear enough, he gives a description, and based on that, he was able to formulate an opinion that it would obstruct the
view. Okay, suppose he had said that. Suppose he had said, in this case, I saw this exhibit right there hanging from the rear view mirror, and I concluded subjectively, based upon my review of Terry Stop's precedent, that it might, under a reasonable suspicion standard, obstruct the clear view of the highway. Suppose he said every word that I just said, would you still say we should reverse this trial, Judge?
Judge, I think we would then explore further and find out what distance did he see it from? Did he see it at the
so
time?
So if he had said all that, that wouldn't be enough for you?
Judge, again, it depends on what he's describing. If he's describing something that clearly obstructs a view. In other words, if he had said, I stopped the car because I saw a giant teddy bear in the window. So let's use that. If I saw a giant teddy bear and he was able to describe a giant teddy bear, then whether or not he knew the law and whether or not he said, I reasonably suspected a giant teddy bear was blocking a view, objectively, we could then conclude that he had the right to stop and investigate further because we would all agree he was blocking the view. What he had in this case is he saw something in the window. That's all he testified to at the time. There's no evidence that he knew at the time it was a parking pass. There's no evidence he knew at the time that he thought it was large enough to obstruct the view.
He said he clearly saw it. He said he clearly saw it. And yes, it could obstruct the clear view.
After being asked in court. Now
that's normally where testimony comes out, is in court.
No, the question is, what did he observe at the time? The question is, when someone walked up to him at the hearing and hands him a copy of the pass and says, did you observe at the time? At the time. At the time he's looking at it, could this obstruct the view? The answer is, he was looking at it, he said, yes, it could. Now, the judge had found, no, it couldn't. And they're both looking at it post facto, but neither of those is, before we get to what the judge found, having actually looked at it and made a review of the...
Can I ask you, though, about what the judge found? Because you seem to argue the trial judge applied a per se rule here.
He did. He said it.
Well, how could he have applied a per se rule if he went, took it under consideration, and then actually went, and for the first time in his judicial career, he did a view. He went and placed it on a rearview mirror in an automobile and looked at it himself. If he's going to that length, why not, if it's a dangling object from a rearview mirror, why not just say that's enough right there?
Because, Judge, if you read what he said, he had us both sides brief the issue. And if you read his comments, I believe it's on page 103, 103. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I'm sorry. I apologize. It's page 53. It is page 103. And at the bottom of 102, he says, now, the court was of the opinion that there had to be reasonable suspicion. There has to be reasonable suspicion to believe that the object obstructs because the offense is not a dangling object. It's a dangling object that obstructs the view. He goes down further and says...
Well, can I ask you about that? He doesn't just say it's a dangling object. He says it's a dangling object that obstructs the driver's clear view. And he had to go take a view himself to see whether it did that.
Yeah, he had already done that, Your Honor. He had already said that. He had already
but
done
if I
that.
Might interrupt, the issue isn't whether it obstructed the view. That doesn't have anything to do with reasonable suspicion.
That's
the issue is, and we all agree it was a dangling object, so the issue is whether there's reasonable suspicion to believe that the object obstructed the driver's clear view of the highway through the windshield. So the question before us is whether the dangling object in itself might reasonably obstruct the driver's view.
Through the windshield.
Through the windshield.
And
but not whether, in fact, it does.
Counsel, you're into your rebuttal. You may continue your argument now.
Well, I'll respond. That's true. But the court, when it initially did the view, it clearly found that it did not obstruct the view, and it found no evidence of reasonable suspicion. It found no evidence that the officer in question had reasonable suspicion.
Well, when the court ruled, it said this, and I'm quoting the court, the court is of the opinion that the standard for the officer to have stopped the vehicle was, is there reasonable suspicion that this object, not any object, not a bunch of fuzzy dice or anything like that, this object is blocking or cutting off from sight or blocking an unhampered, unrestricted view of the highway. Well, comma, there is reason to believe that it could be. I'm not sure why that statement is ambiguous.
Because it follows, it still doesn't get to the issue of what the officer saw at the time of the stop. In other words, what the court was saying is, if you have an object that's hanging, and an officer sees an object that's hanging, then that could create reasonable suspicion.
So we're back to the point that you're saying that this record doesn't support the thought that the officer testified he saw this card, not a card, not
no,
fuzzy dice.
The question is, when did he see it? There was no testimony that he saw it and was able to describe it at the time he stopped it. There was no testimony that he had reasonable suspicion based on the size of the object when he stopped it. All the testimony and the finding of the trial court was that he was of the opinion, which the court then agreed with after doing research, which is not the position of the Commonwealth or the Attorney General here, but was the position of the Commonwealth below, that any stop.
So he was wrong. So what? But the officer can actually have a basis for reasonable suspicion that is flat out legally wrong, but the stop is still good if there is a legal basis.
If we know it's a legal basis, if we know how close he was, if we know what his view was, and if he said based on his training and experience and he could describe in detail, we would assume that even if he was wrong, that would be reasonable suspicion. But in this case, the court specifically found that he couldn't do any of those things, and therefore they were ready to rule against, but then they applied essentially a per se rule.
Did the officer testify that he clearly saw?
You have about a minute and a half left.
Judge, I think I would like to, thank you, Your Honor, I would like to reserve the rest of the bottle.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Ms. Martin?
Ms. Martin, could I ask you to perhaps set the parameters of this case for me? Is it the position of the Attorney General that every traveler on the highway that has a GPS suspended from their windshield is subject to being stopped for further investigation?
No.
Well, what's the difference?
Because the part of the statute that what it says is that it's you cannot have any object suspended from any part of the vehicle so
and
as to
a GPS device that's attached by suction cup to the windshield is suspended from that windshield, is it not?
Right. And so
then why isn't that exactly the same as
well,
we're talking
because
about here?
If, when the officer is looking at it, if the officer believes when you see this and if you believe that it might be an obstruction, then
doesn't a GPS obstruct the view of the highway?
Well, I think that depends on where it's placed.
How about the high school student's graduation tassel that is suspended from the rearview mirror? Does that give a police officer reasonable suspicion to conduct further investigation?
I think that it's sort of a. I mean, you have to look at what the actual object is. You have to look at a tassel. I mean, it might just be a thin little thing. That may not be an obstruction.
And all argument before the panel, the Commonwealth took the position that anything suspended from the interior of the vehicle would justify a stop to investigate. Now, I gather you're backing off of that. But
well, if
you
don't
back off of that, you need to give us some parameters for where police officers. It can't be a no when I see it because that clearly violates Terry.
Well, I think, Your Honor, that perhaps whatever I said at oral argument, and I didn't listen to the argument, but I think that maybe there may have been some miscommunication or misinterpretation. Maybe, you know, what I was saying one thing and really thinking in my head something else and
well,
you heard something
where
else.
Where is the bright line then? Draw the bright line for me between the high school tassel and the GPS and the parking pass. Or is it perhaps that the police officer had some suspicion the car was carrying contraband? Is that perhaps the bright line? If the police officer wants to stop the car, then it becomes a potential violation.
Well, but that goes to the officer's subjective motivation. And what we're looking at
exactly
here is objective reasonableness. And so that's why when you look at these things, I mean, if you just look at the wording of the statute, if the officer thinks that this object could reasonably obstruct the view, then that could be a basis for a stop to determine if, in fact, it does. But that's not really the same
as saying
that any object is going to require
the hypothetical I think Judge Petty is posing, it can be expanded this way. If an officer sees anything, whether it's a GPS, a graduation tassel, furry dice, you name it, if he sees anything and simply says, I saw an object dangling, that's it. As I understand your argument, that's enough to articulate to justify a Terry seizure.
You have to look at, well, if you look at the unpublished cases this court has decided or cases from other jurisdictions, the thing that seems to stand out is that in those cases, the officer, unlike in this case, said that he saw this object and he believed that it might be obstructing the view and therefore it was a violation of the statute. Now, if Officer Richard had said exactly that in this case, we wouldn't have this case. Or we would have a different sort of case, perhaps. And so
we appear to be debating a case that's not before us, which is a 16th of an inch wide tassel or a GPS, which is ordinarily not located right in front of your face, dangling from a mirror.
Right.
Those cases have to be decided at some later date. The question in this case is whether a 3x5-inch opaque card right in front of the driver's face reasonably could be suspected that it might partially obstruct a clear view. Isn't that the only issue
we
need
that,
to decide?
That is the issue. And it doesn't. We don't care whether it actually did obstruct. We don't care whether the trial judge went out and looked at it and made some comment, well, everybody would agree that it doesn't obstruct.
Because if the object hanging from the mirror had been a state-issued handicap parking permit, would that allow the police officer to stop the car for further investigation?
Well, it's my understanding, Your Honor, that you're not really supposed to drive with those things hanging from your mirror, that you have it when you park and you put it out there and then you take it away. And so if they're driving with this handicap thing, yes, that would be an obstruction.
Did the officer ever tell the drive of the vehicle, why he stopped the vehicle when at the moment he stopped it?
I'm not sure that the record really establishes that. The driver, the officer stopped the driver, and at some point in the record he talks about how he cited him for seatbelt violation and for this dangling object violation, and also at that point the driver, he'd consented to the search and he'd had marijuana in his pocket, and so there were a lot of other things going on.
Suppose he says that he's doing radar. He
right.
sees his car coming down the hill.
Yes.
And he watches and it goes by him, and then he takes off after the
right.
car.
Right, and he stops it within a quarter of a mile.
When he gets to the car, does a record show any conversation between the officer and the driver at that time as to why he stopped?
I don't believe that the record
now,
does.
At that time, he is aware that he's not wearing a seatbelt.
Right.
Okay.
Right. But I just don't think that the record is very clear on exactly what the officer did. I mean, you could look at this officer's testimony and say, perhaps he just was not very adept at testifying in court.
Well, he says, I think the record during the transcript indicates that he knew the car. He knew Backham. It was Backham's car. And
right. There,
some
I was looking for the actual page site of that, and I couldn't find it. But yes, there is. Somewhere in the record, it does say that he was familiar with this car, and he was familiar with the owner of the car. And
some history.
With the defendant, there had been some other problem between them and the car at some point in the past. So he was familiar with that. But
Ms. Martin, does it matter legally whether or not his motivation was pretextual?
No. I mean, because, again, we're looking at what an objective, reasonable officer would have done in similar circumstances.
And, counsel, isn't it merely a matter at that point of using the objective reasonableness standard and reviewing the statute itself, which talks about obstruct the driver's clear view of the highway? So, theoretically, even under Judge Petty's hypothetical, the statute would provide if it obstructs the clear view of the highway. It depends on what the interpretation of clear view of the highway means.
Right, and that would sort of go specifically to whatever the object is, and that would really have more
but
to do.
But that wouldn't that, I mean, your argument then is, in response to my question, seems to be yes, the officer could stop the car for the GPS or the tassel in order to get back there and investigate, get perhaps behind the wheel, investigate whether it obstructed the view.
Well, again, it depends on the particular object. In one of the unpublished cases, Pegram, the object was some sort of large cloth that was hanging from the rearview mirror. And the officer couldn't really describe it at trial. I don't believe it was introduced as an exhibit. And so all they had was, well, there's just some sort of large cloth. Well, that could have been, you know, most anything. You know, if we say, well, it's a little teeny tiny string, that's a totally different sort of thing.
But at this point, we're not worried about whether it does obstruct the view. We're worried about whether the police officer can investigate
and
whether it obstructs the view.
And
so,
we have to look at,
so there is reasonable suspicion. That seems to be your argument.
And we have to look at what we have here is we have this parking pass, this opaque parking pass. It's 3x5. And that's very similar in size to these air freshener things that the court has said it was reasonable suspicion to stop cars for that. In one of the cases, it was a 3x3 air freshener, a little tree thing. In another thing, it was described as a 1.5x3.5-inch dragon. And
in the air freshener case, as I recall the evidence in that case, the officer testified that the air freshener was hanging down below the mirror some, I forget how specific he was as to inches or whatever, but he also testified that in his, to his view at least, it looked like it was obstructing the driver's view of the highway.
Right. And so as I said here, the officer just didn't elaborate. But that really goes to his subjective intent, to what he's thinking, not to what an objective, reasonable officer would do.
Did the officer in this case testify at trial or at the suppression hearing that he clearly saw this opaque placard and that he believed it could obstruct the clear view of the highway?
Yes, he did say that.
How is that different from Bryan?
Well, it's different from Bryan in that in Bryan's the testimony was just a little more specific. And
well, it's different from Bryan because we actually have the card, and Bryan didn't have we have the evidence. We don't need the officer to testify to anything. We know exactly what it was. We don't need him to describe it or tell us what he thought it was or anything else.
Right, and because and the officer said that he saw this, he clearly saw it, and then on cross-examination, you know, that's when it was presented as a defense exhibit, the parking pass. And so the...
You were asked a moment ago about Virginia handicap parking things, which are just about the same size as this.
Actually, I think they're bigger, Your Honor.
Yeah. Have you ever looked at those before? Is it in the record whether or not there's a clear statement that says don't keep it on your rearview mirror while you're driving?
I responded to that based on personal experience, Your
okay,
Honor.
Okay, well then we'll leave it alone.
So I don't think there's anything
else. Counsel, can you point to the record for us where there is any testimony or where the Commonwealth presented any evidence that indicated that the officer knew anything about the object in question other than that it dangled from the rearview mirror?
From the Commonwealth perspective, his testimony was that he saw it dangled from the rearview mirror. And he did say, also he was asked, well, could it obstruct? And he said, well, yes, it could obstruct. On cross-examination is where the exhibit itself was presented, and there was a little more discussion about
it. I was looking at the direct testimony that was elicited by the Commonwealth, where the Commonwealth was trying to get the officer to testify with some degree of specificity as to how, in this officer's view, the object dangling from the rearview mirror obstructed view. And that's why I'm asking the question, is there anything in the record to support?
Well, the Commonwealth was asking him those questions, was trying to get him to expound on that, but the officer just didn't really respond quite the way the Commonwealth was thinking that he was going to, just in reading the transcript.
Well, he testified he clearly saw this.
Right. I mean,
so why do we need any more testimony to know what this is since I've got this in my hand?
Well, but I think that's exactly true, Your Honor, but I think that the Commonwealth was trying to get him to expound a little bit on what he saw.
So what? It came out on cross. What difference does it make?
But if you look at the whole record, you know, certainly you've got everything that was said. He was cross-examined. The judge went to great lengths to take a viewing of this, to look at it. The judge thought about it a lot. And then when he came back and finally made his ruling, he did say, you know, that the standard is there reasonable suspicion that a reasonable objective officer might think that this would obstruct. You know, certainly the judge's comments were not, well, any object is enough to stop, but he brings that out.
Does the record reflect to what extent that parking pass was behind the rearview mirror? How much of that was hanging below the rearview mirror?
I don't think that there was a specific measurement given, but on page 33 of the appendix, the judge at some point was talking about how, well, yes, it does hang down below the rearview mirror.
But we don't know by how much.
But the judge made that observation, but we don't know how much. But just kind of looking at it, you can say that it probably hung down a couple
of
inches.
Well, that depends on how big the rearview mirror was, doesn't it?
Well, that would be true, but this was not a gigantic truck. This was a just regular sedan car.
Ms. Martin, is it your position that this court should create a per se rule that if it's dangling, then that creates a particularized suspicion?
Not that there should be a per se rule that it simply dangles, but that if it's objectively believed that it could obstruct. So, I mean, I see that's really kind of a fine line between, you know, how you're going to cross over that.
Well, police reading this case then would always say it could be obstructing.
Well, and in many instances, it probably could be obstructing. I mean, I think in just things that I think about as objects, I mean, I think really that they probably could obstruct. And so that's why it's not exactly a per se rule that it just merely dangles, but that it could obstruct, and that's the reasonable objective test.
So some high school graduation tassel, in his or her opinion, violated the statute, a judge could say, well, you're just plain wrong. An 18th of an inch piece of rope is not going to clearly obstruct anything, whereas a 3x5 inch opaque card might.
Yeah, and a court could say that, and again, that goes more to whether the statute is being violated itself, which is a separate question from reasonable suspicion. And
Ms. Martin, let me ask you the same question I asked earlier. I think were the officers familiar with this particular car?
Yes, Your Honor.
And how were they familiar with this particular car?
I believe that the record somewhere shows that there had been some kind of altercation between the owner of the car and the defendant about his use of the car. But I don't know exactly
where that is. That's fine. Thank you.
I see that my time is expiring. I would ask that you affirm this conviction because the court properly suppressed the evidence. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Martin. Counsel?
Yes,
now, counsel, when does the objective belief of the officer have to, when does it start? Does it come after he's made the stop, or does it come before he's made the stop?
No, I think, Your Honor, right at the beginning, in order to make this, I'm sorry, in this case.
Yes, sir.
He never, as far as his belief that it obstructed view, he never made that finding until.
Is there anything in the record to suggest that the officer made the objective determination before the stop that the object was obstructing the view?
No, in fact, there's nothing in the record to indicate that even when he wrote his order up to the day of court, it's only on cross-examination of my voir dire.
So wait a minute, you're saying that this record doesn't support the inference that he stopped this vehicle because he thought this car violated whatever the obstruction of clear view statute was?
That's correct. He stopped it because it was a dangling object. That's the reason he gave over and over again. In fact, the court found, and in its finding, it said...
But why do we need to decide whether or not there's a per se rule that anything that dangles, tassels, dice, wedding rings, handicap cards, this card, why do we need to write a per se rule? Terry cases never do that. Terry cases are fact specific.
We don't, Your Honor. In fact, we shouldn't. That's the point. That was the argument that the Commonwealth made in the lower court when it became clear.
Here's my last question to you.
Well, his time has expired, and I think that if you want to wrap up real quickly.
Yes, the lower court specifically made the finding that he did not form any belief as to whether it obstructed or didn't obstruct, that he was, quote, clueless as to whether it obstructed or didn't obstruct the view. So the court then adopted the Commonwealth's view that any dangling object per se gives the officer the right to stop and investigate.
Counsel, your time has expired. It went fast, and you were asked a lot of questions, but we know that you rely on the brief and the materials for what you didn't get to in your oral argument.
Thank you,
Counsel.
Chief Judge Felton, if I may ask for a moment of privilege on behalf
you
of
may,
the
court. Counsel, you may return to your table.
Thank you, sir. Before we adjourn and while we are still in public session, I've been asked on behalf of the court to express our appreciation to our two retiring members. This is the last en banc proceeding for Judge Frank and for Chief Judge Felton. As of yesterday, resolutions were adopted by the court. In the case of Judge Frank, the resolution acknowledged that he has brought to this court many years of judicial experience, specifically 15 years on this court, 8 years in the Circuit Court for the City of Newport News, 5 in the JNDR Court in Newport News, and before that, 9 years as a commissioner in Chancery, hearing cases and making recommendations. In addition to this depth of experience that Judge Frank has brought with him to the bench, he has served the legal community in many other ways, including, for example, serving on the executive board of the Judicial Conference of Virginia. He served as an adjunct faculty member at the law school at William & Mary. He served on the Board Grades Conference, the State Bar Professionalism Program, just to name a few of them. The resolution that was adopted as of yesterday concludes this way. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the members of the Court of Appeals of Virginia hereby express their heartfelt appreciation and highest praise to Judge Robert P. Frank for his dedicated service, exemplary friendship, and many contributions made during his career. A similar resolution was adopted by this court regarding Chief Judge Walter Felton, and that resolution acknowledged that Judge Felton has brought with him to this court a diverse background of experience in government service, including, for example, he served as a captain in the United States Army Judge Advocate General Corps. He has been a professor of law at the College of William and Mary, served as Deputy Attorney General, counselor to the Governor, Director of Public Policy for the Commonwealth, served on the commission studying the 21st century vision for the courts in this jurisdiction. He served on state and federal judicial conferences, Boyd Graves Council, to name just some of them. And the resolution adopted by this court regarding Chief Judge Felton ends this way: "Now, therefore, be it resolved that the members of the Court of Appeals of Virginia hereby express their heartfelt appreciation and highest praise to Chief Judge Walter S. Felton, Jr. for his dedicated service, exemplary friendship, and many contributions made during his career. On behalf of a grateful court, we express our appreciation to you both." Thank you.
Thank you. We thank counsel for your argument. The court now stands adjourned. We appreciate your presence.